Okay, now tonight we'll try to talk a little bit about our vision in Hong Kong. And I think all this that we are talking about, the reason why Lee Yee goes to Hong Kong and so on, or why Dave went to Singapore, you know, back in 1968, was because of a simple carpenter. I always pronounce it carpenter. You know, it's carpenter, right? Carpenter, yeah. I was talking about this in some other cities, and someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Is it carpenter? Carpenter?" And I said, "Yeah, that's a singing group." Okay, whatever it is, all this is because of a simple carpenter who gave a command 2,000 years ago. Now, sometimes when you look into the Bible, you read Matthew 28, go into all the world. You wonder if he's serious. You know what I mean? If somehow we can get into a time capsule and go back 2,000 years and observe that scene, you know, you can almost giggle to yourself. I mean, is this man serious? There stands this simple carpenter facing 11 ordinary men and women. Right? They were fishermen, tax collectors, and so on. Now, I hope there are no tax collectors here. I understand there are a lot of those in America. Well, here stands a simple carpenter facing 11 ordinary men, and he has the audacity to say, "Go into all the world and win them for me." Isn't that amazing? I mean, even President Reagan, is my pronunciation right? President Reagan or Ronald Reagan. Even Ronald Reagan would not dare to give such a command, right? And yet Jesus did. Now, you can almost stand and look at this scene and giggle to yourself. What audacity. You know, does he know what he's talking about? Just think of it. I mean, he has never even left his country. Well, he has been to Egypt when he was a little baby. And if you believe in the Book of Mormons, he's been to America. That's what they tell me. Right, huh? And, well, whatever. Even if he had been to America, how dare this simple carpenter tell these 11 ordinary men to win the world for Jesus Christ? Does he know what he's talking about? You know, the great cultural differences, for instance. Like Lee, when he came to Hong Kong, and we invite him for dinner, 8 o'clock, you know, we got some friends. And he came on time, exactly 8 o'clock, you know. Now, he doesn't do that in Bible studies, but when we invite him for dinner, he comes, 8 o'clock. And he says, "Where's everybody?" Now, usually we Chinese sort of come a bit late because I hope those Chinese here will agree with me. Because if you come on time, people will think that you are there just for the food, you see. And we come a bit late, you know, pretending that, well, it's not, you know, we'll come. It doesn't matter. Glad that you invite us for dinner. We come a bit late, you see. And Lee came on time. He didn't know that he was communicating that he really wants the food. Okay, even though it's true. But there's a bit of honesty there. But he didn't know that, you see. And then another time, he invited a couple of us, a couple of families, you know. There were some doctors and businessmen to his house for dinner. And for we Chinese, we usually prepare more than enough because it would be embarrassing if we don't overfeed our guests. All right? In fact, when you go to a Chinese dinner and you don't want to eat anymore, make sure you leave some on the dish. Because if it's empty, we'll fill it up. And you thought it's polite. You know, it's bad for Americans to leave food on a plate, right? So you eat it up and we fill it up again. Because it's impolite for us Chinese to leave an empty plate for you. Alright? Totally different in culture. Alright? And Lee invited us for dinner and we went there and he prepared some hamburgers. You know, and a little bit more people came along, you see. He prepared us hamburgers. And you know, to prepare for a Chinese dinner, what we do is we sort of leave our tummy a bit empty so that we can accommodate the excess, you see. And so we did that. We went to Lee home. He prepared a little bit of hamburger. And that night, after we left his home, all of us, without telling him, went for supper. And not only that, the difference in culture. You know, the West taught me that when you buy presents for people, wrap it up in a nice piece of paper, okay? And buy a nice card, right? You know? If you don't do that, you know, some lady especially get angry about it. And so I did that to my mother. You know, I bought her a beautiful present, wrap in a nice piece of paper and buy a nice expensive card, the most expensive I can find. And when I give it to her, she rebuked me for wasting money on the paper and the card. And recently I bought her a piece of gold, nothing, just piece of gold, put it in a red envelope, you know, an ang pao, and she was happiest woman on earth. Now, I say all this just to illustrate the great differences in culture. And this man, Jesus, had the audacity to say, to go and win the world for him. Does he really know what he's talking about? Not only that, talking about, you know, difference in culture. The numbers. When Hudson Taylor first recruit Europeans to go to China to preach the gospel, he said there were 1 million a month dying without Christ. That was many years ago, over 100 years ago. 1 million a month. Today, the population of China is 1 billion. In other words, it's about 2 million a month. What's the population of Oklahoma City? You know?
Half a million,
alright. Now there are 2 million. That means in a week. Can you imagine that? In a week, this whole city would disappear without Christ. This whole city. The thousands and the millions. Can we imagine that? And you know, when Paul was on earth, they estimated that the population was something like 400 million. And that is why the mission field of China is the biggest mission field yet to be faced by the Church of Jesus Christ. Does Jesus really know what he's talking about? And of course, as you look at this incident, Jesus commanding the disciples, you obviously will think that he doesn't know what he's talking about unless you believe he is who he is, that he's God himself. You know? And that is why he sandwiched the command of the Great Commission with all authority on heaven and earth is given to me. And then at the end of the command, he says, my presence will go with you. We say this is the Christian sandwich. Alright? Go! And all power will be given unto you. And I tell you, beloved, if you want to experience the power of God, there's nothing else better than going out and fulfilling the Great Commission. Fantastic powers. You know, I just, for instance, remember an incident. And Dave wasn't there in Singapore yet. It was 1966. And in Singapore, there are several races, Chinese, Malay, and so on. And I remember very clearly, in 1966, suddenly there was a big riot between the Chinese and the Malays. They fought. And they really killed one another, literally. I mean, blood was on the floor. And for months, you know, after that riot, none of us dared to go to the barbers, because most of the barbers in Singapore were Malays. You know, and we didn't want our ears to be cut off, see. But anyway, there was this big riot. Now, in that year, 1966, for the first time, the Singapore Christians prepared a citywide crusade. The first time in their history. Called Asian Evangelistic Commission. And the navigators were involved in helping in the counseling, so I was sort of helping, because I was involved in the NAVs. And suddenly on Friday night, boom, the whole city was in chaos. Alright? And the Christians were disappointed, because they have prepared this big citywide campaign, and the whole city was in chaos. Anyway, there was curfew, nobody could go out into the streets, and there's no way you can organize a crusade in a curfew, right? Any of you tried that? Anyway, the Christian prayed. And then after a few days, surprisingly, the riot stops. The curfew hours were dropped, and by the time the crusade starts, it dropped to 12 midnight. And I tell you, I was there on the first night, and the stadium was packed full. The last night, there were men not only in the stadium, but they were all down the stairs, right to the streets. And hundreds accepted Jesus Christ. Hundreds and thousands. Then that night when I went home, you know what happened? The riot started again. You know, it's almost as if here was this riot, the Chinese and the Malays were fighting, and the Christian prayed. So God says, okay. So they stopped. And we have this crusade. And when the crusade was over, God says, okay, it's over, go ahead. And then they go again. Maybe this is just one of the examples. But beloved, there's nothing else, nowhere else you can experience the great power of God as you fulfill the Great Commission. In fact, I can remember another incident in the hospital where you visited with us. You know, it was a TB hospital where the poorest of the poor were admitted. And there was this patient, 50-year-old man, who has a family, 4 to 5 kids, and he has got TB, tuberculosis. Now we sent his bacteria to the MRC, the Medical Research Council of London in Hammersmith, and a guy by the name of Professor Mitchison, who is supposed to be a world authority in tuberculosis, Professor Mitchison, examined the bacteria. And I received a letter from him saying that, I'm sorry, but we have tested every known drug known to man against this bacteria, and they are all resistant. So I'm terribly sorry. You have to tell the man that he will probably die. So I got a letter and I prayed about it and I invited this patient in my room, 50-year-old man, short little guy, you know, very quiet, very sad, has a family. And I told him the news. I says, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, we have got this examined by the top man on this, in the field. And he says that he's all resistant. What can I do? But I said, I tell you what, I can pray for you. And Jesus can heal. Now, of course, I don't know how Jesus does it, but whenever Jesus heals, the Bible seems to say that it's because of the faith involved. You know, the faith of those being healed. And somehow Jesus is able to pick up those who have faith and those who don't. Now, I don't know how to do that. So I told this man, I said, I tell you what, you go and think about it. If you feel that you want to apply faith, you tell me and I'll pray for you. Alright, think about it. Now, I was shivering because I've never done that before. You know, we doctors are kind of skeptical about faith healing because if it really works, we're out of business. So we kind of, you know, always, well, but anyway, here's a case. Here's a man who is at the end of the road, see? So what can I do? So I said, you go and think about it. So he went and thought about it for one night and he came to me and he says, you know, I want you to pray for me. I want to believe in Jesus. Pray for me. I want to be healed. So I said, okay, I tell you what. So I sort of prepared myself and so on. Then I went down to the wards and bring him to the doctor's room and I said, I'm going to pray for you. So I didn't know what to do, you see, because I've never done it in my life. I don't know whether to put my hand on his head or, you know, or sort of, you know, be dramatic or what I do, see. You know, you know, I've never done that before. So I said, I tell you what, why don't you sit down? So he sat down now. Fortunately, he didn't know that it was my first time. So I said, Lord, you're going to help me. So anyway, he sat down and I was too embarrassed to put my hand on his head. So I sat down next to him. And I, you know, sort of shyly put my hand on his knees. You know, can you imagine a scene? I was sitting, he was sitting here, and my hand was on his knees. Now, I'm sure that he has never been faith healed before, so that was alright, you know. And you know, in the weakness of my faith, I've never done it before. In the weakness of my faith, I said, Lord, here it is. You know, I'm in this situation. Here's a man that I've come to my wit's end in medical science. I said, Lord, will you heal him? And I tell you, I've never experienced this before. I felt a warmth, a current going through my hand. You know? And the next day, the bacteria was gone. You know, every doctor in the hospital was surprised. And that man and the whole family came to know Christ. You know, and became Christians. Now, that's why Jesus says, all authority on heaven and earth is given unto me. So therefore, go. Now, do we believe him? And it is because we believe him. That is why we're here tonight. Right? You know, if not, we might as well go home. See? If not, if God don't really exist, this is a ridiculous meeting. But because we believe him tonight, or do we? You know, because if he is really real, then we will give our life for the task of winning men and women for Jesus Christ. Okay? Now, Lee went to Hong Kong, and Dave went to Singapore, and so on. It's all because these men take the words of these simple carpenters seriously. And they have experienced the power of Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm sure tonight if you ask Dave to come out, he will just share stories of the stories. Right, Dave? The great power of God and the only regrets you have in Singapore, I think, is meeting me. Well, but anyway, I'm glad he met me. Well, coming back to Hong Kong, we went to Hong Kong because we felt that with all these tasks in mind, the great numbers of Chinese, and not only that, the possibility of government control and punishment. I'm sure you know. Now, I don't think it's realistic to think in terms of trends in China. It's more realistic to think in terms of a pendulum. Let me explain. Now, suppose this represents government policy by the Chinese government, alright? This represents government policy. They are controlled by two group of forces. One group of force is ideology, and says it goes in this direction, alright? Ideology. As a result of ideology, they govern the country in a certain way. Okay? Now, whatever way you look at it, communism is anti-Christianity. Alright? There's no, you know, pure communism is anti-Christianity. There's no escape from it. Okay? Now, but then fortunately there are other forces. Socio-economic, you know, making money, pragmatism. That acts on the other way and they cross somewhere in the middle. And as a result, the behavior, the practice of government in China and any communist country comes out such that it is not always here. Alright? Now, today in China, we saw them swinging over this side. Because they want to be rich, in simple words. Alright? And in many sense, you know, this statement is very true. One of the politicians made this statement. They say that In capitalism, men exploit men. In communism, it's different. It's entirely the reverse. I don't really know what he's talking about. Anyway, now, in China, that is sort of moving in this direction because of socio-economic factors. They want to be rich. But it would be fallacious to believe that this is a trend, you see. If you look into the history of China since 49, you find that this is a pendulum. And as you move this way, the forces, now I have not studied physics, but I believe that as you move this way, the forces to push it back this way is getting more. You know? And it's happening. In fact, they have a anti-spiritual corruption campaign. And the problem with the Chinese government is you cannot predict what they will do. For instance, in last year I was in China and they were telling me that they were going through this anti-corruption, Jing San Wu Yim, you know, Wan Dong, you know, this anti-corruption campaign. And one of the professors told me that in Canton, city of Canton, there was this guy, young guy, you know, about 18 or 21, he was riding bicycle around the streets of Canton, and when he see a pretty girl, you know, he will ride to the pretty girl and give the girl a kick, you see, and boom, goes off. Do that happen in America? I think for Americans, they will drive the automobile there and open the door. Anyway, that's what happened, and he became very well known, you see, the lady kicker, whatever it is, you know, the whole Canton knows it. Now, then come this campaign, and he was caught. You see, they nabbed this guy. So the authorities asked him, why did you do that? And this guy said, what's wrong? You know what they did to him? They brought him out and executed him. Just like that. Then there was this guy from Hong Kong who was challenged by some friends. They dared him, do you dare to bring the Taiwan flag into China? You know, and show it in public. He said, of course. You know, he thought that, oh, well, what can happen? What can they do to me? So he brought this flag into the square in Canton and show it, see? Taiwan flag. You know, ta-ta-ta-ta, you know, show it. And the next thing he knew, he was captured and he was again executed. Well, coming back to this, you see, the forces to push the pendulum back will be stronger and stronger as it swings more and more to the right. Now, it will be then sort of unwise to prepare the Church of Jesus Christ as if it's going to be here, see? Because when it swings back, that's the end of it, right? Isn't it then smarter to sort of prepare the Church of Jesus Christ over here, see? Now, there's one guy who did a thorough study on this. And Gene knows him. You remember the pastor, Wing So?
Yes.
And by the way, he's in America now.
No.
Yes, he's in America and he's hoping to take a degree in social work and go back as a social worker. Mm. You know, I'll give you the details later. But anyway, this guy did a study and he figured out that there are only two kinds of churches that survive China up to the Cultural Revolution. Two kinds. One kind is Roman Catholics. And the reason is because the Roman Catholic Pope sent sort of two high-powered PhD Jesuit priests to China just before 1949. And they train up the whole Catholic Church so that they galvanize it into a tight, strong, hierarchical structure. Right? Real faithfulness to the Pope, obey the Pope, and so on. And in fact, there is one guy who just studied this thoroughly and he's going to publish it soon in a PhD thesis done in a Roman Catholic seminary. Alright, they did this thorough preparation. And it took the communists 20 years to crack the Catholic Church. Now, that's one way to do it. You see, if you have a hammer to hit something, you make it real hard, then you won't break it, right? That's one way to do it. Now, the other group of churches that survived up to the Cultural Revolution are the little flock. The independent churches with no pastors, you know, just laymen, you know, sort of can disappear into the woods. Now, those will survive up to the Cultural Revolution. Now, so these are two ways to go. You see, you either make it real hard or make it real soft. So that when you hit it, no big deal, see? You know, you hit it, nothing, hit it. You know, you see, you hit a pile of sand, nothing happens. Okay, now, and the thesis of this man that we just talked about just now, he says that there is no way the Protestant church can go the way of the Catholic church. You put three Protestant pastors together, you know, give them 24 hours, don't feed them, you know, don't distract them, and they'll be fighting, right? You know? And in fact, I was in Lausanne in Switzerland, and I tell you, these Protestant pastors were, they make a Lausanne covenant, and then someone came up with a counter Lausanne covenant, and so on, you see? So there is no way the Protestant church can achieve what the Catholic church can achieve. And therefore, the thesis of this man is, we should go the other way. You see? You know, we should go the other way. If you try to be hard, there's no way we can be hard enough. We'll only be brittle. Okay? Now, so this was all in the thinking when we went to Hong Kong, and we worked on several assumptions. We felt that we need to have a layman movement. Because of the large numbers we're talking about in China and Hong Kong, how can we have enough workers unless the laity moves, you see? You know, you can have a million Billy Graham. It's still not enough. And we don't have a million Billy Graham. How many do we have in America? One, right? Okay? But we have hundreds and thousands of laymen. And plus, you know, the Bible is so clear on this priesthood of believers thing, right? In fact, I used to think that the uniqueness of Christianity is the Savior. And it's not true. Because you look at Hinduism, they are also saviors. There's a religion called Mithraism in the early Roman Empire. It also has saviors. Now, I think the uniqueness of Christianity is two things. And I grew up in a multicultural and multi-religion environment. And all this religion that I know doesn't have these two things. And they all found in 1 Peter 2. Number one, every religion has a group of guys they call priests. Plus the Old Testament, by the way. That if you want to go close to God, you're going to go through these guys. Christianity says, we are priests. Every religion has a little place, special place, that you've got to go there to get nearer to God. They call it temple, mosque, you name it. And in 1 Peter 2:5 says, we are the temple. We are the bricks. We are the temple. So therefore, both the temple and the priest is in you, see? Now I hope you know that you don't go to church because, I'm not saying you don't go to church, but you don't go to church because it's nearer to God, alright? Don't think that you go to church Sunday, yesterday, right? It's yesterday. Now, don't any of you go to church because you think that when you enter church, you're nearer to God. Far from it, right? You know? I mean, don't think because you stay a mile away from a church, when you enter church, you're a mile nearer to God. Now, there are other reasons to go to church. Okay? You should go to church, I think. But don't go to church for that reason. Okay? And in Christianity, God makes us priests, you see. So, go function as priests. The layman should move. And in fact, you know, brothers and sisters, it's only as we function as priests, we really have joy in our hearts. Isn't it? You know, just before I came, about a week before I came, I was working on this guy who works in a labor office. And we brought him to an evangelist Bible study. And together, a dentist, 56-year-old dentist and myself, we were witnessing to him. Now, this dentist has been a deacon in the church, an elder in the church, big church, famous church. He was the elder in the church for over 20 years. And he was sitting in committees after committees, alright? And as he says, I sit in so many committees until I'm all dried up. Alright, now then we begin to have this project to lead this labor officer to Christ. And so I made an appointment with him, and this dentist, he's quite wealthy, he says, get him to meet in my club. Now he has this private club I don't have, see? It's a jockey club, in fact. You know what's a jockey club? Huh? Do they have that here? You know, it's where they do horse racing. Alright. So, I said, okay, we'll meet in the jockey club. Because if we meet in his club, he has to pay the bill, see? So, so anyway, we meet in his club. And we were talking to this labor officer, 42 years old. At the end of the talk, he really wanted to accept Christ. So I said, why don't you accept Christ? I said, if you want to accept Christ, there's this small room at the back. We go there and we pray, see? And he doesn't want to do it. He says, let me do it in the church. Now, I was not quick enough. Only afterwards, this dentist tell me that this Chinese guy probably didn't want to accept Christ where they raise horses, you see. You know, it'll be embarrassing in the future to give a testimony saying, you know, I accept Christ in the jockey club. Okay? But anyway, I said, okay, in that case, what do you think about it? So, the dentist and him and myself got into the car and I drove him home, you see. When we reached his home, he doesn't want to go down. He said, I want to talk some more. So we talked some more. And then, we answered some of his questions. Then he said, let me think about it. I said, okay, think about it. I thought he would go home and think about it. He took out his glasses and closed his eyes and was thinking about it in my car. And I didn't know what to do. Then he was closing his eyes, you see. Never had that experience before. And he was keeping quiet. You know, I just didn't say a thing. But this dentist being older, you know, older people are a little bit more long-winded. He was jabbling away. But anyway, he would see this man just ignoring him and just thinking, you see. Then after about 10 minutes, he opened his eyes, put his glasses back on, and he says, yes, I want to accept Christ. Okay? And he bowed his head, and together we prayed, and he accepted the Lord Jesus Christ. And I tell you, his face lights up. You know, he's still growing the Lord. I just talked to him on the phone before I came. Now, the thing I want to say is this. He left the car, you know, And this dentist came and sit in front of me. And I drove him home. I tell you, I've never seen this dentist a happier man. He was almost jumping up and down in the car. I was, you know, I tell you, he was one happy man. He was 50, 60 years old, and he said, man, I've never seen things like this. You know, we prayed together in the car. We said, Lord, we are so thankful, you know. Now why? He has sat in committees for 20 years. Well, because we are priests. And unless we fulfill our destiny as priests, we will never have that joy. You see? Anyway, now, the first assumption we have for Hong Kong. Now, you notice that I'm not speaking very systematically. It's something I learned from Dave. No. No. You know, I once went for a camp and, you know, training camp, and Dave gave us a 3.5-hour sermon. Remember that? So, he tells me that I must, follow him. No, don't worry. But anyway, the first assumption we had is that we got to get a layman movement. Moving, alright? It is important. You and I, we must move, see? We cannot just sit down, we got to move. Now the second assumption we had is that in such a situation as this pendulum we are talking about, the best deal is to do a personal disciple-making ministry. Now it's quite simple. You know, if you ask the standard churchman, you say, hey, why don't you go to Oklahoma City and start a ministry? Alright? Now what he does usually, I'm not saying always, usually he will go to Oklahoma City and find a place to put a pulpit like this so that he can preach, right? He look for a place. Now it's very easy to identify a place. When the thing swings back, there goes the place. You know what I mean? Now in the mind of the average churchman, if you don't have this pulpit here and a nice hall, not a home like this, you can't do the ministry. Now but that was not the early church. You know, Kenneth Letteret and Michael Green, who wrote the book Evangelism in the Early Church, says, archaeologists have not found any church only after the 3rd century. And the oldest church was found in Turkey. Now when they dug up the earliest church, they found that it was just like this, with chairs facing one another. Not the standard, you know, church that you see now, which looks like a movie house in Hong Kong. You know, chairs arranged, and then, you know, it was different. It was just an ordinary home, and it's very clear that the early churches met in homes like this, alright? And just fellowship with one another. Now, that's an average churchman. If you ask a standard disciple maker like you and me and, you know, Gene, for instance, if you say, hey, why don't you go to Oklahoma City to start a ministry? You know what he'll do? He will go to Oklahoma City and says, where are the men? Right? You see? He don't need no church. Don't need this pulpit too, you know. He can start a ministry exactly where he is, like the early church. It is very interesting. Michael Green used these words. He says the reason why the early church was successful in evangelism was because they gossiped the gospel. Now, I like that. You see? Because how many of you are gifted evangelists like Billy Graham? How many of you are gifted evangelists? You know, looks like it's only me. And I'm not, so. How many of you are able to gossip? All of us, see? You know, and Michael Green says the early church was successful because they went out and every man and woman gossiped the gospel. Now, we can do that, can't we? We can gossip the gospel. You see? Now, and we make this assumption. The way to avoid this swing is to have a layman, you know, a personal disciple-making work. It's the simplest. You don't need no big churches. You don't need no pulpit. All you need is a life, you and me. That's it. Now, lastly, we felt that the best way to go about it is like the early church. I'll try to explain this. Is to be non-organizational. That means we have no organization. We don't have no president. Like Paul, for instance, he was never the president. He just traveled around, start churches, get them going. He left, and he was never made pope. He could have if he wanted to, you know. And again, Kenneth Letteret says it's quite apparent that Jesus left behind no organization, unlike Buddha, who left behind a big chain of monasteries when he died, or Muhammad, who left behind a kingdom. Jesus left behind nothing, just 12 men, and he changed the world. Alright? Now, there's something good about this non-organizational thing. For one thing, it helps people to have ownership. Now, for instance, if there's an organization, says I run Sito's organization, then if Humphrey works for me, his ministry is basically a chapter of my ministry. Right? And, if he's kind of naughty, I fire him and I take the ministry back, right? Now, what we do right now in the non-organizational situation is, If Humphrey is having a ministry, and if I have the privilege of helping Humphrey, then Humphrey does his ministry. Now suppose Humphrey doesn't like me, he leaves, the whole bunch leaves with him. You see? That's the beauty of the non-organizational world. Now, plus further. In a non-organizational world, it's very hard. You see, let me illustrate this. Just before I came, apparently they have unearthed a syndicate in Hong Kong. They have been cheating in the jockey club. Sorry?
They unearthed what?
A syndicate.
Oh, thank you.
Syndicate. It's a group of crooks, alright? That was sort of monitoring the races in the jockey club, alright? They got a lot of top jockeys. They got the trainer, the assistant trainer, you know? And for years they have been manipulating and making millions of dollars. And nobody knew about it, you see? Fortunately, I wasn't putting money in the horses. If not, I'll be mad, see? Okay, for years everybody was putting money in the horses and they were losing money and these guys were all raking in. Now recently they were caught. You know why? Because this bunch got overconfident. They bought an office space in Hong Kong Central, alright? And they started a filing cabinet with all those names. And of course the reason was, it's getting so big, we got to organize and, you know, and arrange things. So they do all these things and got an office manager, okay? The Anti-Corruption Bureau in Hong Kong, the ICAC, we got them knowing. Now they're already suspecting these guys, just that they have no proof, okay? And we got them knowing, they were watching them, see? And so once they start this up, they went in and nabbed the whole cabinet. And just before I came, they were brought to the courts, all of them. Alright? Now, this is the advantage of the non-organizational situation. You see? Because if you have no organization, then if someone sort of nabbed you, and they say, who are your staff? Well, you have no staff. Okay, they say, who are your friends? You can always say, it's Billy Graham, you know, Humphrey. Yeah, it's true, we have friends, right? You see? So we feel that this is probably the way to go. And this is probably the way the early church did it. You see? Now have you wondered why the early church survived 10 waves of the most severe persecution known to the history of the church and yet survived? Why? Well, we don't know. But at least there's one clue, you see. There was a governor by the name of Governor Pliny, P-L-I-N-Y, who wrote a letter to Caesar Tiberius. And it seems that Caesar Tiberius sent Governor Pliny to a province called Bithynia, which is in North Galatia, alright? Probably a province that, and it could be that Paul started a church there. Alright, you believe in the Northern Galatian theory. Now don't worry about that. But anyway, Pliny goes there, and we got this letter in historical documents. He wrote to Caesar and he says, you know, you sent me to this place and you want me to eradicate the Christians. Now I want you to tell me, Your Honor, how do I do that? Because fortunately, when you accept Christ Jesus in your heart, God didn't tattoo a cross on the head, see? If not, he will, you know, if not, it's very easy for the government authorities to catch you. Just go to the canteen and look for all the crosses on the head, see? Now, Pliny wrote to the Caesar and says, how do I do that? How do I know who the Christians are? You know, how do I locate them? There was no organization. There was no filing cabinets. How do I locate them? They were not even an underground organization. Now, that's the difference. They really were just a network of brothers. Alright? And Caesar Tiberius replied, now, of course, today he will have a way. He will just go to the canteen and see who say grace. You know? Now, I don't think the early church Christians say grace, so he was having a problem. Alright? But anyway, this Caesar replied, and Caesar says, I know your trouble. So I tell you what, he says, go and look for some well-known Christians, you know, and make scapegoats and examples of them. And that's all you can do. Now, from history, it seems that he failed. Because that province became one of the most densely Christian populated province in the Roman Empire. Okay? See? So that's the advantage. And this is exactly what Gene Moore says, you see. He says, if you don't get shot, don't put your head up. Right? You see, if you don't want to shoot you, you know, don't put your head up. You put your head up, people will shoot you. See? Now, so we have these several assumptions in our mind when we think of the Hong Kong ministry. Why? Because we feel that if we have this assumption, then when the pendulum swings to the right, it will survive, you see. Okay? Now, then we come to the big question. Does it work? You see, how can you go to a place with no stripes, nobody knows you? How do you start a ministry? You know, you just can't come along and say, hey, God has appointed me leader of the non-organizational ministry and He has appointed you to be involved. You see? He will say, who are you? You know? How do you get it going? Well, good question. And I think this is a situation whereby you can really totally depend a lot. Now, we didn't know about all this. We were just thinking about it. We were dreamers back in those days. And as we review now, we can see the gracious hand of the Lord. You know, when I was going past Hong Kong one time, and we were thinking about all this in our mind, but how are we going to get it started? Then I was in the airport waiting for my plane to go back to Singapore. And as I was waiting, I suddenly hear a very funny voice praying on this side, you see. And I turn around, and in the crowded airport, there was this Englishman by the name of Moss. I didn't know his name then. And he was trying to pray in Cantonese with a bunch of Chinese brothers. I later on knew that that was the only Chinese prayer he knew. Okay, but he was doing that. So anyway, I said, great, very interesting, you know, and I just went on hanging around, see. Now in the airport, there were many planes. So I boarded one of them. It was a 747 heading for Singapore. I got onto the plane. There were, I think, at least 365 seats. Big 747. So I went and sit down, and there were three chairs. It was empty. I got my seat. So I waited. And of all the planes in the airport, of the 365 seats, you know who sat next to me? Moss! You know, I couldn't believe it. So I look at him, and you know, I was the mischievous type. Dawson will tell you that. And I say, hello. He says, hi, see. I says, hey, you know, I think you must be a Christian. You know, this Englishman. You know? And he says, why? And I says, there's this beam coming up from your head, see. And he believes it, see. He says, oh, is it? You know, he was smiling and he was red in the face. He was so happy. But anyway, on the way back, we were talking, and, you know, the Lord just knit our hearts together. And it was he who introduced me to me this lady by the name of Isabel, which Jean has met. And today she is running the ministry among the nurses, together with Nan Fong. They are working in 6-7 different hospitals, you know, having Bible studies with all the different nurses. And I knew this, I met Isabel. You know, Chinese is like that. You know, if you are a totally stranger, they are kind of afraid. But if you have some connection, and this is especially in mainland China. If you say, my grandfather's sister, uncle, son, know your great-grandfather's daughter, brothers. Okay, there's a connection. Then that's it. Alright, hey, hi. Alright. You know, you just got to find some connection. And Paul has a good relationship with Isabel, and he introduced Isabel to me. And it was also him who introduced me to the hospital where I first worked in, a hospital among the poorest of the poor, which Humphrey has visited. Good time, isn't it? And, you know, at that time, we stayed in a small 400 to 500 square foot apartment, and I don't know how he managed with us. He stayed in another doctor's home. But anyway, it was also in this hospital that we came to know two male nurses. And one of these male nurses today leads a bunch of factory workers. Okay? And they have gone to several groups now. He did the same thing, he just helped people to do the ministry. And as the ministry got going, this guy by the name of Johnson felt that it's good enough, so he went back into the grassroots. And today, he's having a group of men around him that he calls sky blue collar workers. Because they are, he says it's between blue collar and white collar, so he's sky blue. Alright? Now, so he's ministering, you see. And then the other guy that was in the hospital is by the name of Daniel. And he's quite a guy because he grew up sleeping on the streets. And his father brought him down from China, left him there with his uncle. The uncle didn't care about him. So he slept in the streets, make money working in the store, and brought himself through high school. Very talented guy. Just didn't have a chance. Alright? And the Lord led him, and he began to work with polytechnic students. Okay? And the ministry must be, I don't know, he has grown to, he says about 3 to 4 groups, probably over 200 students in Bible studies. And there's a bunch of graduates, you know, to it. And the last I heard from him, they have captured the Alumni Association recruiting secretary. They got one of the guys there. Okay, and now every guy who graduates from the polytechnic in Hong Kong, you know, will be contacted by the alumni secretary, who is a Christian, you know, who will therefore present the gospel to him. Now anyway, this guy, in fact, just before I left, again, he helped this guy to minister. It's their ministry, you know, and now he has some time to do grassroots, and he felt burdened to minister to Christian musicians, or to musicians. And he just cut his first record, I just told Gene. And right now he's trying to start a ministry among people who are talented in music. Now, so this is how it goes. Alright? Now, then another thing. So I met Paul Moss. Now, when I was in Hong Kong, someone brought me to a China prayer meeting. I thought it was a big prayer meeting, but I went there was only 3 to 4 people. And then there was this girl by the name of August who was in the prayer meeting. You know? And without myself knowing, they say, "Hey, Sino, why don't you share about something?" See? And I was caught unprepared, and therefore I stood up and shared the only thing I know, and that is disciple making. And I noticed that this girl, August, was mesmerized by what I said. And I was pretty impressed. It never happened to me before, see? Boy. And, you know, fortunately, you know, I controlled myself, but there she was really impressed. So at the end, sure enough, she came up to me. And she says, "I really like what you say." And then she said, "You know, I just translated the book, The Master's Plan of Evangelism, into Chinese by Coleman. You know about the book?" Now, see, I just translated the book. And I was so impressed by the book. And you say exactly the same things. Then I discovered that I can only mesmerize a lady if she has translated a book. That's the only way I can mesmerize a lady. No wonder it happens so rarely. But anyway, you know, of all the people, and she says she don't belong to this prayer group. She just happened to be there at that time. She was invited. And she just finished translating this book, and I just happened to come along. You know, it's just like, you know, anybody could have come along and say the same things I said, and she will be mesmerized. Alright? So she was very impressed. She says, "Hey, tell me more about this." Now, the important thing is she then introduced me to other Christians, and there is one neurosurgeon by the name of Thomas. I don't know whether Gene remember him. Now, Thomas, a neurosurgeon, he sort of started the ministry among the white collars. And it was August who introduced me to him. You see? And he also introduced me to another doctor called Dr. Robert Fong, whose wife, Dave, is... I'm going to ask him to proofread the ETS for you. You know? And she introduced me to all these people. And that's how I knew them, see? Now, if I were to go up to these people and say, "I'm Sino Wing Hong," no way I can make an entree. Okay? Now, so does the non-organizational ministry works? Well, it should work if what Jesus says is true, that all power on heaven and earth is given unto Him. You see? So I could never have done it. I could never go in there and say, "Hey, I'm Sino Wing Hong, and God of all the planes in the airport, of all the seats, has to put a Paul Moss next to me." You see, it's just amazing. Now, how about Lee Yi? Well, I must tell you some stories about Lee Yi. You know, he came to Hong Kong, and as you know, even Lee Yi was a miracle. See, how I met Lee Yi. I mean, some of you may know that I stayed with Walt Hendrickson some years back. And in fact, Walt has this particular habit. He doesn't like to influence people's life directly. He doesn't want to play God. So he doesn't tell people anything. You know, he doesn't want to sort of say, "Okay, you go here, you go there." He doesn't do that. So I wrote to Walt. And I said, "Who is this Lee Yi staying with you?" And then Walt replied and said, "How do you know?" I said, "Walt," I wrote back, and I said, "Walt, I know of every Chinese on earth." But anyway, around those time, Gene came to Hong Kong. We had good times. Then I told Gene about Lee, see? And in fact, Walt was so secretive that even Gene doesn't know about Lee's existence. You see? And as Walt says, he never had told Lee about Hong Kong. Never. So it was Gene who came back and asked Lee to come to Singapore. Come to Hong Kong, sorry. You see? Now, at that time, we have no ministry among the businessmen. There was no context, you see? And what happened is Lee is a stockbroker with Goldman Sachs. Okay? And about 4 or 5 years ago, he went to Hong Kong representing Goldman Sachs, which is this big firm, and started contacting local businessmen, you know, and make clients of him. And many of these businessmen, because of Lee, has made a lot of money. Well, Lee told me some loss. He didn't tell me who, but, you know, and, you know, but anyway, because of this, it's 4 or 5 years ago, Lee knew all these businessmen. Now, I didn't know that such a thing was going on. Then Lee felt convicted, so he went to Dallas Seminary, and then he met, of all people, Walt Hendrickson. And then the whole thing came about, see? And as a result, you see, if I were to meet this businessman, I'd do any of them. So Lee came to Hong Kong and he started ministering to all these people. Now let me tell you some stories. Lee has a son. I'm sure you know. Some of those of you know Lee. Now this son is autistic, mentally handicapped. And they told me that for years they were kind of depressed. Man, why did God give us this son? And then they sort of got victory over it, you know. Now they went to Hong Kong, and because of David, this son, and by the way, I tell you, when David first came to my flat is 7th floor, see, in Hong Kong, he dropped his toy outside the window. And he thought it was still Colorado Springs. So he climbed up the balcony to pick it up, see? And by the time he got him by the hand, the whole body was outside the balcony. You know? And God's grace, he pulled him back. And he's still alive today. And fortunately, he's alive. Because of David, Miltini, Lee's wife, got involved with the Hong Kong Mentally Handicapped Association. Now, the chairman of this association is a lady by the name of Jackie Bembridge. Lady Jackie Bembridge. Now, we call someone lady in Hong Kong if the husband is a sir. That's knighted, alright? OBE, then you get a sir. Okay? So, there are two people we call sir in Hong Kong. One is a knighted guy, and the other is a policeman. We say, sir, sir, see? We call it in a funny way, sir, you know, we call it sir. And it works, you know. You know, if you say sir, he won't give you a ticket. Anyway, Sir John Bembridge is the financial secretary of Hong Kong, or minister of finance. What do you call it in America? Huh? What do you call a minister of finance? Head of the treasury. Is it? Okay. Now, Sir John Bembridge is the head of the treasury in Hong Kong. Okay? And very colonial. He came from a company called Swire, big company that runs the airlines and so on. And in this company, they have three toilets, male, female, for Chinese, and private for the Englishman. Okay? Now, that's Sir John Bembridge. But anyway, Miltini got to know Jackie. Okay? Because of David, see? And then Miltini and another lady called Shirley just asked Jackie, would you like to do Bible study? And to their surprise, she said, yes, sure. So they started studying the Gospel of St. John. See? The standard Navigator Evangelistic Bible Study. You know, we call it EBS. One non-Christian asked me what EBS is, you know? And he was a non-Christian. His wife forced him to come almost, you know. So he said, what is this EBS? And because he's a non-Christian, I said, it's every man's Bible study. Anyway, Jackie got involved in an EBS with Miltini. Lesson number one, John chapter 1. And I tell you, Miltini says she knew nothing about the gospel. She didn't know who John the Baptist is. She didn't know who John the Apostle is. The only John she knew was John Bembridge, her husband. You know? And so for the first week, Miltini had to sit her down and explain everything to her. And she was worried that she will never come back because Lady Bembridge is not used to being talked to. Alright, she's more used to talk to, not being talked to. But anyway, next week, there she was again. And it was chapter 2. Jesus turned water into wine. See? You have any water? Christ will turn it into wine. You need him, see? And so on and so on. Now, that week, Lady Bembridge was hooked. She says, this must be real. I've never seen anything like this. See, the word of God was powerful. Came the third week, the new birth, Nicodemus, remember? The new birth. And that week, Lady Bembridge, with tears in her eyes, accepted Christ into her heart. She's still growing. And she told Miltini, she says, you know, and at that time, Lee was really depressed. Because they had been in Hong Kong for about 6 months and you know, the rubber meets the road, as the English would say. And then came this. And Jackie told Miltini, now I know why God sent you and your husband to Hong Kong. I tell you, it was a great affirmation. And then Miltini told her, I don't know why she said that, but Miltini told her, Lady Bembridge, now I know why God gave me David. Isn't that beautiful? See? Well, not organizational, but with the great power of the Lord. You see? And the irony of the whole thing is this. When Lee was going to Hong Kong, he was worried about David. He was afraid that David would not have the best of education. And yet today, irony is, you know, really ironic, but David has the best of education. Of course, I mean, if the chairman of the Mentally Handicapped Society of Hong Kong is in your Bible study, you can't lose, see? You know, David got to go to picnics and personal tutors and so on and so on. And strangely enough, it is the other children, Christy and Michael, is having problems in education. See? How God looked after his own. And Lee is doing well. I mean, he went through tough time. He went to cultural shock. He for some time, he didn't know where he was. He was depressed, you know. And at one time, he was engaged in so many speaking engagements that he was tired out. I mean, he was so disoriented that he even went to speak in a Filipino made fellowship group, see? Anyway, the Lord has blessed him. Now he has a Bible study with quite a lot of men, you know. He, for instance, in his Bible study, there was this guy, Julian, who is the son of the guy who owned Crocodile Shirt. Now, what is Crocodile Shirt in... Dave, what is Crocodile in America? Huh? Izard, yeah. He's the son of the guy who owns that. Now, he's a Seventh-day Adventist. And that is why the Crocodile Shirt Company in Hong Kong closed on Saturday. Okay? And this guy met Lee, see? And Lee invited him for a Bible study. And Lee didn't tell him, Lee says, Seventh-day Adventist is alright, we still study the Bible. So he came and he's now really getting into the Word. Okay? He was really shocked when Lee told him that the Fourth Commandment is not found in the New Testament. Well, he might be influenced soon. Knowing Lee, I know he'll be influenced soon. And then he has this guy, Mr. Lui, who is a rice merchant. One of the top rice merchants in Hong Kong. He has a wife who really loved a lot. And we knew his wife for some time. And every time Mr. Lui comes to any Christian meeting, you will see him following his wife behind. Alright, his wife will come in, see? And in comes Mr. Lui. You know, right behind. You can't see his hands. I think there was a chain between he and his wife. And I tell you, every time he'll come in and sit down and he'll be dozing off, you know. Then, because Lee was a stockbroker, Mr. Lui became his client. And they meet once a week to talk about the stock market, see. And they were talking and Lee was making some money for him. Lost some, make some. And I think right now making some. And then one day Lee says, hey, why don't you read the Bible? He's a Christian. So they started doing the quiet time together. Once a week, see. Starting with the Gospel of St. Mark. And Lee says, Mark chapter 1, this guy begins to apply. See, I'm an old man now. He's not really old, about 55, you know. Not really old, right? So, young man, sir, that's right. Okay, and he says, I'm an old man now, not really old, but he says, I better make my life count. Now today, about several weeks ago, Lee told me they have just finished the Gospel of St. Mark. And when they meet once a week now, they almost quickly pass through the stock market so they can get to Bible study. You know? And Lee is helping him. And then other guys, a guy by the name of Ricky, whose father owned a big company, I don't know what. And there was this guy, CK, in Lee Bible study, who is the Asian director of Carrier Air Condition. Is that here? Carrier? Big, it's big air condition thing. Anyway, there's another guy by the name of John Chi, who deals with leather business, big leather business. Well, you know that he has a big leather business because in his house there's a swimming pool. You know, I mean, anybody with a swimming pool in a house in Hong Kong must have a big business. Okay? And Lee is helping all these men. And in fact, interestingly enough, many of these men have strong Christian wives, you know. And I think Elma probably met some of them. And just about a week ago, Lee was telling me they met in a place called Jardin Watch Out. It's a sort of a sophisticated place to do Bible study in Ricky's house, alright? And Ricky has a wife by the name of Anne. Ricky has a wife. And Anne is a very distinguished lady preacher in Hong Kong. Quite well known. So Lee went to this home for Bible study and he was very apologetic. He learned the Chinese culture. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, he told Anne, I'm sorry you had to come to your house and disturb your home. I'm really glad you let us come. And then Anne told Lee, are you kidding me? He says, this is the first time my husband is going to a Bible study that is his. You know, for years, the husband was going to Bible study because Anne brought him, see, by the chain. You know, and Anne was really excited. And all the wives were excited that all these men are at last in Bible study. Okay? Now, of course, you still got to pray for Lee. Now, let's see. Lee, give me a list to say, see. I better check I don't miss anything. Ah, that's right. For those who know Lee. This is a newspaper. Okay, Hong Kong Standard. And it is reporting on a Hong Kong music festival. And on top of here, you will see a page of all the winners. You see all the diplomas here? See? All holding diplomas. They have won, see? Now, so they wrote an article, quite a short article, on those who won. Then at the bottom here, it says, listening a pleasure. And it's about somebody who didn't win at all. You know, it's about what? There was this family sitting in the music festival. You know, all the parents were all anxious, wanting their children to win. And there was this family sitting in front, who was so happy, relaxed, you know, and obviously enjoying the music. And so the reporter came and wrote a story on this family. And he says, although little Christy Yee didn't win, okay, the piano solo yesterday, she was perhaps the one competitor who enjoyed them the most. You see, and Milton, his wife, says that when he interviewed her, she said, because of Christ and everything, you know, gave her testimony. But sorry to say, when they wrote this, they cut all those out. And another thing they cut out, you will notice, there's Mutiny, there's Christy, they cut Lee out. Maybe he was very anxious, so they say, man, better cut him out. Anyway, if you want to see, those who knows Lee, you know, you may take a look. So obviously the Lord is blessing him, and you know, and the ministry is growing. In fact, this businessman ministry is only about a year. We started about a year. You know, Lee was getting and other men involved, other Chinese men involved. And the Lord is really blessing. I mean, the whole excitement is seeing lives change. I told you about a labor officer. You know why he came to hear the gospel? Because he has a little brother, 36 years old, not really young, 37, I think, 37 years old. Willard Leong, a manager in a chartered bank. Do you have a chartered bank here? No? Anyway, this guy is a manager. And Willard told us that he started in chartered bank as a clerk, got promoted to manager. And he says, there's no one else who got promoted that high and that fast as me. But he says, I live in misery. He carried a bottle of William every day. Alright? And he says that he and his wife, they have been married for over 6 years. He says if I were to add all the minutes and the seconds that my wife and I talk, it will be not more than 3 weeks in 6 years. So his marriage was breaking up. He was fooling around a woman, you know, and terribly dissatisfied. Then he got involved in one of the Bible studies. And at the end of chapter 3, St. John's Gospel, he accepted Christ. His life changed. You know, he stopped fooling around, obviously. And then he was, you know, in fact, one of the reasons why he went to the evangelistic Bible study was because he was seeing this psychiatrist. You know, Dr. Chung, psychiatrist, who's about 46 years old, or 48 years old, who came to know Christ through a guy called Victor, who is now one of the leaders in the businessman ministry. And Dr. Chung came to know Christ, and he's a psychiatrist. Now, Willard went to see him. And Dr. Chung said, hey, you know, Willard, you got to know Christ. If not, you will not be healed. And that made Willard looking, and he joined a Bible study. You see? Now, unfortunately, now that he came to know Christ, his life was changed. He threw away the Valium and didn't see Dr. Chung again. So the guy lost some business. But anyway, it was all joy because Dr. Chung is in the ministry. We come together and there was a lot of joy. Now, Willard's life changed. His wife resisted the gospel. Was quite unhappy about it because the wife has a lot of bitterness, unhappiness. One day Willard came to Bible study and he says, you know, I have a problem. I want some advice. He says, my wife doesn't like my servant. They're a little girl, see. My wife doesn't like my servant. And I think it's my wife who is at fault. You know, because my wife is very fussy. Alright? Now the wife works in another bank. And she comes home and complains about everything. About the servant. So we ask, we're like, why don't you ask your wife to stop working? He said, oh, let me think about it. When he got home, the wife came to Willard and says, I think I'd like to stop working. Alright? Now, Willard is a typical Chinese. And Chinese likes money. Alright? Unlike Americans, Chinese like money. Okay? Alright, and Willard says, in fact, this is what he said. He said, if I was not a Christian, I would never have said yes. So he came back the next week in Bible study. He says, hey, my wife wants to stop working. What do you think? And this dentist, Dr. Chen, says, why don't you go and tell your wife, wife, what is it that you want? I love you, and whatever you want, let's do it. This is for you. Alright? So he wrote down some notes. I don't know what he did, but he went home and he said, I'm sure he didn't do that, but he says, wife, I love you. I have the best interest in mind. Whatever you want, let's do it. And so the wife was shocked. It never happened before. So she left her job. And then, to add on to that, Willard says, you know, even though you leave your job, I tell you what, we'll keep the maid. I want you to really, you know, have all the time to concentrate on the child. The wife was shocked. Okay? I tell you, she was at first very antagonistic. Then because of all this, she came to our Christmas party. She saw all of us, you know, saw Lee. And then 2 days after Christmas, on the 27th of December 1985, Mrs. Chen, the wife of this dentist that together with me led the labor officer to Christ, went and talked to her. And again, with tears in her eyes. No, there was no tears in her eyes. They talked to her. She was already, she accepted Christ. And when she lifted up her head, they say, tears were flowing down. And I tell you, you know why the labor officer came to the Bible study? Because he says, there's something going on with my brother. I want to know why. Now, not only the labor officer, there was another guy, Eddie by the name, who is a lawyer and who is a friend of Willard, this guy, banker who accepted Christ. And this guy has got 3 mistresses and 1 wife without anyone knowing about it. I don't know how he handled it. They have 4 women in his life. Nobody knew, see? And Wheeler says he was in trouble. I mean, talking about trouble. See, and Wheeler says sometimes when he goes shopping, Eddie always looks behind his shoulder. You know. Anyway, Eddie came to the Bible study. And at the end of it, he says, I don't want to accept Christ. I'm impressed, he says, but I cannot, because when I walk out of this door, I know I'll sin again. So he walked out of the door. Now, a week later, Willard went and talked to him. And he says, you know, Willard, I've had it. You know, I'm no good to all my mistresses. I feel guilty every time I walk into the home. And I couldn't, what's happening to me? You know, I couldn't handle it. And he said, I even made the foolish move of promising my wife that I'll be home every day now except once a week. And I don't know how he's going to handle it. You know, once a week, I mean, he's finished. And I tell you, this guy says that, give me another 2 weeks, I'll think about it. Now, his name is Eddie. I tell this story so that you can pray for him. Pray that the Lord will give him no peace, you know, until he turns to Christ. Alright? Now, I can go on. There are so many other stories. Let me see. Maybe one more. You know, I can tell you about this Dr. Chen, the dentist, you know, that sort of, with me, led the labor officer to Christ. Now, he first got involved in the ministry because he wanted to learn how to walk with God. So, we meet in breakfast, a couple of us, and he started having the quiet time. Now, one day, he just asked, hey, how do you share the gospel? And there were only 10 minutes left. So, we sat down and drew out the bridge illustration to him. All right. So, he took it very happy and put it in his pocket, see? Then the next week, he says, hey, you know what? I went home and telephoned my younger brother. His name is Mao. We call him Mao Sok, you know, Uncle Mao. He's the chief engineer of Public Works Department in Hong Kong. And he got Mao and he said, hey, Mao, I want to tell you something. So, he sat down and wrote out the bridge illustration to Mao. And Mao was very excited. So, he was very excited. So, he came and gave this glorious report. So, we said, did you ask Mao to accept Christ? He said, what? I said, do you invite him to accept Christ? He said, what's that? Well, we said, don't you do that? You know, and the problem was, it was only 10 minutes and we did not tell him that you're supposed to ask him to receive Christ. You see? So, he said, alright, let's see. Okay, tell you what. So, we taught him, you know, how, make an invitation and so on, you see? So, okay, I'll do that. So, he folded up the paper and again went off. Now, what happened was, he called his brother again. And when he went to the brother this time, the brother was sitting out in the living room with the bridge illustration on the desk like that. And a whole page of comments, you know. And the brother says, well, I think it's a very good illustration. And he went through one by one. Because this guy is an engineer. It's typical, see. Nice and crisp. And he says, this verse should come first and so on and so on. Now, at the end of it, this dentist says, great, I'm sorry, man. Now, tell me, more important thing. Do you want to accept Christ? And the brother said, of course I want to accept Christ. You know? And so they prayed and received Christ. Okay? Now, then Mao led his mother to Christ. Okay? Now, because they have three wives, they have three mothers, you see, and two of them have died, and the only surviving mother, who is the mother of Mao, stays in Mao's home. She is a Buddhist, and so Mao led the mother to Christ. Okay? And the mother is emphysema, was sort of dying. We prayed, and she survived beyond Chinese New Year. Now, Chinese New Year is around February. And for Chinese, it's very important to be alive during Chinese New Year. So she was sort of going down. He was going to die around Christmas. There were prayers. She got a remission. She went home. And then peacefully died on the 7th or 8th day. Or no, on the 16th day after Chinese New Year. She peacefully passed away. Alright? And then there was a funeral. And many of the guys in the ministry turned up in the funeral. Alright, in fact, 90% of the crowd were a bunch, you see. There are two things we feel, we always turn up for people. Okay? The top priority is funerals. You know, because in funerals, many Chinese doesn't come, you see. So if you come, you show that you love them. Alright? The second is wedding. So all the guys turn up. Even one guy who just accepted Christ by the name of Ho, and his birthday was on the same day. And he still turned up. Now, that's fantastic for Chinese. Because for Chinese, if you go to a funeral on your birthday, you're finished. Alright, you're gonna have bad luck the rest of your life. Alright, it couldn't be as bad. But anyway, he turned up, see? And in the funeral, there was so much peace and joy, a quiet assurance. So some of the relatives began to ask, hey, what's all this? And Dr. Chen, the dentist, got a couple of them, 3 to 4, and they're gonna start an EBS in about 1 or 2 weeks' time with their relatives. Okay, now this is the magic of the layman ministry. Okay? So that's what Lee is doing. Pray for him. I mean, he's still going through cultural shock, but the Lord is obviously blessing. You know, there are many coming to know Christ. And And I believe, beloved, that the layman disciple-making ministry works. Why? Because the carpenter who gave the command is God Himself. Now, beloved, it's obviously true. All power on heaven and earth is given unto me. Therefore, go. Is it absurd? Is it ridiculous? Of course it's not absurd. But if it's not absurd, what are we doing about it? Are we giving our lives? You know, it's so interesting. It's a new experience for me to work with men who, around this age bracket who are older than me. And for some of you, maybe you don't know because you're not in the age bracket. But you know, when you reach 40, many men go through what they call a midlife crisis. You know? And I don't know what that is. One reason maybe because I was born with it. I ask Walt, I say, do you go through the midlife crisis? Walt says, I've been going through it since I was born. But anyway, when men reach 40, you come to a stage whereby you know where you'll be for the rest of your life, right? I mean, you know, that's the problem with communist China. I was in China at once, and I was talking to my cousin, 20-year-old, pretty little girl, and she says, please help me to go to Hong Kong. She makes brooms for a living. So I said, why do you want to go to Hong Kong? She says, I don't want to make brooms here. I says, but you have no education. If you go to Hong Kong, you're probably making brooms too, you see? Ah, but she says, you know, I'm making brooms now. And I know in my mind, as long as I stay in China, I'll be making brooms to the day I die. Alright? And I couldn't dream. That's very important. I couldn't dream, see? Now for the millions who cross to the border into Hong Kong, 90% of them will still be making brooms or do whatever they're doing before. And die with it. Ah, but the difference is, they could dream. You see, everybody in Hong Kong dream, boy, I'm going to touch the raw tree tonight. I'm going to make some money at the races. If I'm serving a little store, I play it right. And you know, you have to be helping the factory workers, people. And many of them take night classes. And you know what kind of classes do they take? They try to get into the university, where only 1% maybe of these people, maybe 0% ever make it. So I ask them, I say, why are you so stupid? You know, I don't say those words. But you know, I mean, obviously, it is much better if you take some courses on plumbing or electricity or, you know, that kind of stuff. Why take the university entrance exam? And he says, I hope one day I can be a graduate. You know why they take those classes? Because when they go home, they can dream. Okay? Now, when you reach 40, and I'm reaching there soon, you know, in fact, I met Patrick, Dave, and Patrick told me, you know, we have passed noon, and all we have left is a sunset. And that's true. You know, we have passed noon for those who reach 40. And like, for instance, when I was a little boy, I dreamed to be king. I said, one day I'm going to be king. Now I'm reaching 40 and I know I'll never be king. And it's stupid for me to sit there and dream that I could be king. Now, so men go through a midlife crisis. Alright? But you know, beloved, as Jesus says, as Jesus told the Samaritan woman, He says, if you drink of this water, and He points to the water in the well, He says, if you drink of this water, you will thirst again. Now, did Jesus say that ordinary water cannot quench your thirst? No. You can. I mean, have you ever said, man, real thirsty after a run, after jogging for half an hour, and you're real thirsty, and I give you a bottle of new Coca-Cola, which you don't have in Hong Kong, alright, and you drink it, does it quench your thirst? Of course it does. The only problem is, Jesus says, if you drink of this water, you will thirst again, see? And it refers to everything in life. You know, some of these men we associated with, they have been fooling around with women. You know, one of them, for instance, by the name of Lawrence, a big shipping man, he says, I probably spent close to $1 million fooling around with women. And I just cannot figure out why I'm not satisfied. See, you are thirsty again. That's the problem, see? And for some of you who are younger here, let me tell you, you know, you are thirsty again. And then Jesus says, but if you drink of the water which I will give unto you, not only will you never thirst, but it will be a spring in you, springing into everlasting life. Now, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a thirsty man, hungering along, or do you want to be a man with a spring? And the choice is obvious. You know, unless God don't exist. Now, if God don't exist, then we are, all of us are made fools. What are we doing here tonight? Unless God don't exist. But if God exists, what is more fulfilling? What can be more exciting? What can be more relevant and meaningful than to give our life serving the living Savior? Well, beloved, it was 2,000 years ago when the carpenter says, go. Ridiculous? But if not, then we better give our life, that the world may hear Jesus, and that he may come soon. Shall we pray? Father, we come to you and we want to praise you because you are the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Lord, you know we love you. Help us to focus our minds and hearts for the rest of our life on your work, on you, delighting ourselves only on you, and then going out and participating in the work of winning the world for Jesus Christ. We thank you for this privilege. We thank you for the honor. In Jesus' name, amen.